Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. I'm packing right now in hotel room. Skydart and I are leaving Dragon Con. It was a pretty insane couple of days. If you haven't been to Dragon Con, I'll talk more about it on The Hostful, but it is an amazing experience. Pretty much different from any other con that you could go to, but we'll talk about that. Bunch of new shows on the Nerdist channel this week, so tune in. We have an amazing lineup of brand new shows, including Gary Delabate's show, They Call Me Baba Booey, which is sort of a lifestyle tech show. Gary's a super great guy, too. Also, Nerd Turns is coming up soon. Just Cause is back. We did a bunch of cool stuff. We put up the bowling show against Doctor Who cast. Team Nerdist All-Star Bowling, Cop Skyrim coming back, Awkward Family Photos, new show coming up, so go to youtube.com/Nerdist and check it out, because we have a bunch of great stuff, and then click subscribe. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Please visit audible.com/Nerdist. You get a free audiobook. You can listen whenever and wherever. It's just like a podcast, except it's a book that someone wrote and not a thing that someone made up when they sat down like a podcast. There's over 100,000 titles to choose from. If you listen to audiobooks, there's a more than average chance that you probably got it from audible.com. One book that actually kind of helped me write my book, there's a book called Goals by Brian Tracy. He has an adorable voice, but it's a really amazing kind of step-by-step goal-setting book. So if there's stuff you're trying to figure out and you're kind of looking for a way to break things down to figure out how you want to achieve something, Goals is a really great book, and I recommend it. And now for this episode, it's Harry Shearer. Yes, you can imagine him out of the freaking out that we had when we found out that Harry was going to come on. Super, super cool guy. We nerded out on him a lot, but he took it well, so that was good. How can we not? I mean, it's Harry Shearer. I also want to tell you he has a new album out called Can't Take a Hint. It's a comedy satire album that we listened to a little bit of, and super fun. So you can get that on Amazon or anywhere else. But Harry Shearer, fantastic guest. And I believe you will be satisfied with this Harry Shearer appearance. We certainly were. So here it is, Nerdist Podcast, episode number 252. Harry Shearer.
Have you seen my freeze ray?
What freeze ray?
My freeze ray.
I don't know where you packed your freeze ray.
I didn't pack, I was wondering if you'd seen it.
Did you lose your freeze ray at Dragon Con?
No.
This is a weird conversation we're having.
Where's my freeze ray?
I don't know, but your fly is down. Maybe you should freeze that in the up position.
Fuck yourself.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I just started recording. I liked Tom Lehrer's old bit where he goes, "It's a sobering fact to realize that by the time Mozart was my age, he'd been dead for 3 years."
That's right. sobering, especially for Mozart.
Yes, precisely. Oh boy, just such a bad relationship with his dad, Mozart. If he had just could have
just hang in there,
just for
give the old guy a chance.
I mean, come on,
some cognitive therapy for Mozart. Please.
That's all he needed. A little bit,
really.
Of
yeah.
I mean, we wouldn't have gotten the great symphonies.
Hey, you know, he would have had 4 more years of usable life. Where he could have written some sonatinas.
That would have made him the ripe old age of what? Like
39.
39, yeah. Oh, my God. That's gross. Harry Shearer, thank you for being on our podcast.
My pleasure.
This
is it now, right?
We're in it,
yeah,
man.
We're in it. Will be here
I just thought we were bullshitting, but now we're
that's actually podcast. The podcast. Yeah. It's the bullshitting lines and the podcasting lines are the Venn diagram is a perfect dark sphere of those two
things together.
It is.
I'm just amazed that we're in the whole style section of this building.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Can you throw me one of those waters, Jonah Ray, please? Style the Golf Channel G4.
Well, but style is the one that gets me because obviously look at us.
He's right.
Yeah, right. But I had an epiphany the other day about the whole fashion business. It's meatpacking.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
Which I guess is not an accident. Then a lot of fashionable stores are in the meatpacking district here in New York. Yeah, it really is.
See,
it's meat packaging and packaging.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they're doing.
I like a good packaging though. Apple has.
Whoa,
very nice
Jonah
packaging.
Ray, where'd you come from?
From an errand.
Okay, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for starting without me.
What?
I was really worried you guys were going to wait on my behalf.
No. No, we lost you for, you're not in the first minute 45.
That's my favorite section of any podcast.
So you get to come in and the podcast is already warmed up.
You do a great entrance.
Thank you.
The rest of us are just appeared, but
that's
you
true.
Made an entrance.
Yeah.
I do not expect you to remember this because I didn't do anything notable, but I met you, I think maybe 2001,
years ago?
Oh, 2000 years ago.
Yeah. I wouldn't recall that.
What was the president like back then? Oh, he was...
He was younger.
I was at the Aspen Comedy Festival, and I was performing, and you were playing in the lobby with your wife, I believe.
Excuse me?
Girlfriend?
Oh, I see what you mean.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
well, it was a mile high.
You were playing...
and who wasn't? Judith was doing a short little set.
Yes.
And I was playing bass with her, yes. And I remember, I have a visual image of that scene.
It just said everything about what the Aspen Comedy Festival was in its heyday, which was... You know, there's so much amazing comedy here that great comedians are actually performing music in at the St. Regis. Like, it was just a really nice vibe.
Have you ever been to the Edinburgh Festival?
Yeah, I just as a visitor, not as a performer.
Oh, my God. It's just talent is oozing from every little doorway of that city for a month. It's really remarkable.
It's actually happening right now as we speak.
Yeah. The Edinburgh Festival, yeah, it's going on right now.
Oh, I thought you meant the talent.
That's what
the talent is oozing.
It feels just like this, you guys. It feels just like this, but the buildings are older.
Throw down some papers.
The accents are weird. There's circus performers in the streets, but pretty much exactly the same thing as what's going on right here.
Yeah.
There's so much that I want to talk about with you.
Well,
and
feel free.
And ask you around. Is that okay?
It's a free fucking country. For about another 4 minutes.
So we got to get in just under the wire. The door's closing. Yeah. Throw me the whip! I didn't realize until I started digging around a little bit, but you started back like... you were in the pilot of Leave It to Beaver.
Mm-hmm.
And then your parents decided, if the internet is to be believed, we don't really want our son to be exposed to the entertainment industry just yet.
No. I was in the entertainment industry. I was working as a child actor. But they didn't. There was a difference between working occasionally in the business and being a regular on a show. I was going to public school, and they said, if you get this show, we'll have to take you out and put you in that special school in Hollywood for the acting kids. And they just didn't think that was a good idea.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't think it was a good idea. They didn't say this, but I think I got that vibe. You know, when you go in as just a once-every-once-in-a-while actor, you do your work, and there's no real pressure on you aside from doing your work.
Yeah.
But if you're a regular in a series, you know, it's the 20 Teamsters standing around reading newspapers saying, I don't think the kids got it this week. You
know, it's fuck, yeah. Yeah.
A little different vibe.
I mean, listen, no child actor was ever fucked up by the business.
No.
So I don't know they were worried about.
Let's put it this way. It is a beautiful business full of wonderful, warm, sharing human
non-stop.
Beings.
Non-stop.
What could go wrong?
Non-stop.
Adult or child.
A business that's kind to children, women, people with disabilities.
Horses.
What have you.
Horses. Dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs and cats, yeah.
Living together. But it was what do you remember about the? I mean, is it as crystal clear to you? The pilot was it pretty much the exact same show that ended up happening? They just sort of.
You know, I have no personal memory of doing the pilot. I've seen little excerpts of it on the internet, or somebody sent me a DVD of it, and so I've seen it, and I can look at it as an adult and think, I cannot compare it with the show because I've never seen an episode of Leave It to Beaver.
You've never seen an episode.
That's called bitterness, baby.
Learn it.
Even as a kid.
No, even as a kid.
I mean...
I'm not going to do your show, and I'm not going to watch your show. You take... No,
guys, he's really mad.
I had no interest. For some reason, I never watched a complete episode of I Love Lucy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Never had a McDonald's.
Well, it all works out at the end of the episode, Harry. That's
right.
What happens.
Never had a McDonald's?
That's right.
Interesting. No, it really is, actually.
Is that your parents' call?
No. No, that was sort of, well, I mean, in the sense that my mom worked in the restaurant business, and she said, never eat ground beef out of the house.
Really?
Oh, interesting. Because yeah. You don't know what they put in the grinder.
That's very true.
Or what just happens to fall in.
Yeah.
Whether or not they put it in.
Well.
Their stuff.
Yeah, right. Because they're like show business. They care. Yeah,
yeah. It's old showbiz kids get ground into meat and sold as hamburgers.
Oh, Dana Plato.
So that's what the Steely Dan song Showbiz Kids is about.
I forgot to turn I unprofessionally forgot to turn my ringer off. I apologize.
Harry professionally left his at home.
Yes. Oh, I did get a call from your wife who said, Harry has left his phone at home. I've been trying to text him, and it turns out the texts are just coming to me. So I'm supposed to tell you that you left your phone at home.
I got the message even before the podcast started, but now we've shared it with the world.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah.
Do you not
he wants
like
to cut us out? Is that embarrassing?
Huh?
Is that embarrassing? Do you want us to cut that part out?
No. No. As long as you don't give my home address.
Don't.
Don't you dare.
You mean you don't want people coming up to your house and being like, can you please record the outgoing message for my voicemail?
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly what I want.
But also, I didn't know that you had worked closely with Mel Blanc, which is a huge, huge, huge thing for me.
Yeah, on the Jack Benny show for 8 years as a kid. I was a kid. He was a grown-up. Mel Blanc, for the kids in the audience, was the voice of Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
All those characters. And he was also did a lot of characters on the Jack Benny show. And he had a kid who was my age, so he took, and I don't mean this in the Roman Catholic priest sense, a fatherly interest.
Yes. And
no. Cossacks were
nothing
lifted for during the course of this.
It was a healthy paternal
healthy
type
man
of relationship.
Boy. I mean, healthy.
I mean, it's, again, that just whatever. It's coming out wrong that way.
Well, excuse me.
Again, I don't know.
There's no way to deal with this subject without pricking. I mean,
molester and mentored.
Mentored. So what was your relationship like with
sorry,
him at that
point? I'm just thinking about that commercial with for the diabetes test where they say you don't have to prick your finger anymore.
Yeah.
And I think, but you still have to finger your prick.
If you still...
still do.
But it would really be great if that's how you could administer the test.
It would.
It's just, if you just flip the order of the words, it becomes a much better daily test to have to take.
I'll get back to your question.
But sure, yeah.
You spend enough time outside this country. I've been in England a lot this year. And you come back and you see people on television talking about if you have to cath every day, and I'm just, it's shocking.
What is cath?
Use a catheter.
Oh, yeah. Cath. They shorten cath?
You have to cath every day.
Yeah, there's
is that supposed to make it cool?
Commercial with the lady, we call her Kathy Catheter, which is just like, it's like, and it comes with free lube. And it's just
God.
It's real cheery, and she's in a cubicle area.
It reminds me of when I first got my satellite dish. And I saw these U.S. Army Fort Sam Houston in Texas used to have a medical show every day for the troops.
Sure.
And one day the guy didn't show up, so they showed two films, and they were both about colostomy bags. And this had this.
Both of them.
Both of them. Well, they went to the box.
Yeah, of course.
use these in an emergency. Hmm. They had, cheery music. Bob prefers double-sided tape around the stoma. Jillian likes the accordion fold.
Colostomy bags and you.
Now, okay. In a medical closed circuit feed from Fort Sam Houston, Texas, you understand it. But on regular television, Jim caths every day, and now he's got free lube. I'm sorry. I draw the line somewhere west of that.
Yeah, I think the pharmaceutical companies are just getting a little too comfortable with like, oh, come on, we'll talk to them like they're kids.
No. What's there to be ashamed of? It's just a human body. It's just a bag of meat.
Well-traveled is the pathway in comedy of here are all the side effects that they announce on it. But I saw one last
memory
night
loss.
That was...
Memory loss?
I saw one for like the male testosterone replacement medication that the list was so extensive that it almost felt like I think they had to buy extra time to fit in all of them. And they were the most horrible. If your wife is pregnant, don't, it's almost, don't touch her kind of thing.
Well, yeah, like a broken it's like a prostate pill. Prostate, is that it? Like if it's like if the pill's cracked and you're pregnant, do not touch it.
Oh, do not touch it.
Get out of the room.
Yeah, right. Don't sell the house.
Yeah, don't look at it.
There was a one I saw this morning for which is the other side of that coin. The lawyer whose telephone number is 1-800-BAD-DRUG. They're talking about some, yeah,
if
some
you or anyone in your family has been affected by Fen-Phen.
Yeah.
My dealer's been trying to buy that number
forever. The effects they were talking about included death. So if you or anybody in your family has experienced death, you can get a financial compensation.
It's a pretty severe side effect.
Pay me for my death, please. Yeah. Pretty severe side effect.
The side effect to a stabbing might be death or dismemberment.
That's the biggest side effect, yeah.
Could be one of the, but it's
that's life's great side effect
is death.
Yeah. I don't think that's a side effect. I think it's just a full-on. Yeah,
it's an unavoidable byproduct to living.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not
a surprise ending.
It is not spoiler a surprise
alert.
Ending.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, you fucking die.
Oh come on, man! I haven't lived all the way yet.
You don't know by now.
I'm not done living. How could you
this
fucking
just in? You die.
God damn it.
Earth has been around for 2,012 years, guys. So by now, we should.
To be fair, Jonah, 7,500. but it is funny that, you know, that we have all these silly pursuits in our lives, but at the end, it's like, it all ends up the same. Yeah. It's all side effects and pills. Do you, so you worked with Mel.
Yes.
And then.
It's weird because I'll let you finish the question.
I don't care. It's fine.
You look kind of from the long lens vantage point, and you think, well, okay, worked with Mel Blanc, who was master voice guy on a cartoon show and ends up being on The Simpsons and does a lot of cartoon voices, kind of straight line. What did Mel teach you? That, you know, none of that is true. I mean, life is a bunch of squiggly lines that get you somewhere sometimes. And Mel Blanc was a lovely guy in that non-Catholic priest sense of...
Sure, yes.
But never said, here's how you do voices, kid, or anything like that. It was just, he was a wonderful sort of guide to that world, you know?
Yeah, and such a shame that so many of the... I've heard all these stories about how, they would just throw cells away and send these old Warner Brothers cells out. Dude, you got one?
He gave me two, and I didn't throw them away, but I let them. We didn't keep them, and so the over time the paint on the cells
Turned
away.
Yeah.
So I'm as guilty as anybody else. Yeah. I had a Tweety and a Sylvester.
Oh man, that's all right. Well, at least you got it at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't take it with you.
And at least I'm not living in a cardboard box on Wilshire.
You are not living in a cardboard box on Wilshire, but with those cells up on either side. I got the art.
It's
the most expensive cardboard box on Wilshire.
That cardboard box is worth $2 million. Yeah.
I got the second floor cardboard box.
What? You got a walk-up?
With a view.
Is it a walk-up or did you have to... Oh, that's good.
It's a refrigerator box with an air conditioning box on top of it.
But no air conditioning.
Yeah, no.
Now, this is where the air conditioning would
the
go.
The first floor has vaulted ceilings because it's a fridge box.
Yeah. Hey, keep cool in the summer, warm in the winter. But you also co-wrote a phenomenal movie that I've always loved, which is The Real Life, the Albert Brooks, Albert Brooks, which was...
With Monica Johnson and Albert. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was way far ahead of its time.
Oh yeah, so far ahead of its time.
Way
but it was sort of based on the American family.
Which was rerun or they did something.
They
about did. It.
They made a movie off of the making of it.
Yeah. Oh god,
with Diane Lane and but she was
Tony
great
Soprano.
In it. James Gandolfini.
Yeah. No. He played.
please make that in the form of a question. Who is James Gandolfini?
Who is?
And you must wait until the goes to Bozzi.
Gandolfini.
Clues are getting lazy. The guy that played.
But it's funny to me that you guys were satirizing this thing that happened that still wouldn't really become a television staple for another 30. roughly 15. I think Real World kind of kicked it off
with
MTV, which was early 90s, maybe 91 or 92 something. Yeah. So it really did take. But that whole wave of reality, everything. You guys kind of you kind of got to it first.
It was Albert's notion from watching American Family. We were on the path to doing a whole other movie, and we were struggling with it. And he came in one day and said, "Let's do this." And it turned out to be a good idea. The idea of in those days, we believed that you really couldn't, there was no such thing as putting cameras all around people and them actually living their life. I mean, the joke in the movie is that, you know, he goes in and films this veterinarian doing an operation on a horse, and the guy looks up at the camera at the wrong moment and kills the horse. Yeah. Which was sort of the most obvious demonstration of that idea. Now, I think it's gone completely in the other direction. I think people walk around, a lot of people, I get the sense, walk around in so-called real life as if there's a camera on them.
Sure.
I was in a restaurant in England. My father-in-law passed away, and we were down in Kent. And Kent is a suburb, southern suburb of London. But there's a reality show, kind of like the Jersey Shore of England, about the suburban county to the east of London called The Only Way is Essex. the people in there look just like Jersey Shore people. They dress just as well. And kind of their whole body language is very much Jersey Shore. And at the next table, we're sitting a bunch of folks from Kent, the southern suburb, who are exactly acting out like as if they were on this on this reality show. So you really now, the absence of a camera would shock people more than the presence of it, I think.
It is. Well, now, especially since everyone is published somewhere in some way.
And also since we live in a world where there are surveillance cameras everywhere.
Right.
I love the helmet camera in real life.
The helmet camera, especially when you see it. It's so well played, it's just the really dramatic moment, and then just in the background you see that fucking space helmet just kind of go through this. These cameras are, you won't even notice they're here, kind of a thing. And then
the guy's look like he's in a spaceship costume from the '50s, but he's dancing like a cameraman would dance. You know? It's the most attention getting thing imaginable.
So how do you know with a film like that, like how do you write that film? Is it mostly improv, or is it like these are the beats?
It's always different. I think in that film, I took notes in longhand. Hmm? Boy, that sounds like I rode the horse to the studio every day too.
Day, Congriffs.
I would normally type. I was always the typist in any collaboration because it's the one thing I learned in high school was how to type, so I could type very fast and But for some reason, Albert was distracted by that, so I would take longhand notes of stuff instead, and then we would work during the day, and then Albert and Monica would work together through the night. So obviously, different drugs were used by the different pairs. You can draw your own conclusion, and then somehow it all got smooshed together.
Was your background? Did you do stand up ever?
Nope. Nope.
Was there a sketch comedy element or an improv element?
There was a sketch comedy element. I was with a group that was on the radio here in L.A. Called The Credibility Gap. We did 3 10-minute radio shows a day.
Oh, my God.
Making fun of the news. And so we would just, and those would all be written. We'd write them, record them, put them on the air all within a space of 3 hours.
Jesus
and
Christ.
And do it again.
Daily?
Crazy. Yeah.
Oh.
5 days a week.
It's fucking boot camp. That's comedy boot camp.
Yeah, that is comedy boot camp. But man, you do 2 years of that. We actually did almost 3 years of it. You come out with some chops.
Yeah.
You know, Michael McKean was in that and David Lander.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So very funny people. We had a great time, but it was just, churning it out. The one thing you really learn is don't look back. You don't have time to sit around and worry about
don't be
God,
too precious.
That suck.
That's the benefit of a job like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Just on to the next one.
Because you just wouldn't survive if you
you would have no brain left. you're desperate to just think of anything that will fill that time. And it was great, kind of comedically, the place we were at, because we were at a rock and roll radio station, and the DJs in rock radio always think they're the stars, but we were getting like more fan mail than they were, so they hated us.
There's some egos.
No, really.
Some egos, particularly at that time when, I assume this was in the 70s.
Yeah.
So this, that's a time where all of a sudden, like, jocks were kings of media.
They had little rock and roll fairy dust by association. Yes. So they thought.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we were on reel-to-reel tape. God, this is sounding prehistoric. but we were in such a tight rush to get on the air. We wouldn't do it live because we needed to make sure that I don't know what we needed to do. But anyway, we pre-recorded like about 20 minutes before airtime.
Yeah.
We were doing a 10-minute show trying to hit air. And often we were like in the middle of... Fortunately, there was a 30-second Preparation H commercial in the middle of our show. Normally, you wouldn't say those words. But so we would do part one and be starting to do part two, and there'd be this rush to get to the... We were on the second floor studio, and the main control room was on the first floor, and there'd be this race to get the reel of tape with the part one thrown downstairs during the 30 seconds of the Preparation H commercial, you know, to get part two on the air.
Oh my God. Long.
But that's what you do in your 20s.
I mean, listen, 10 minutes, you know, to a stand up 10 minutes is not a long time, but when you are working out new material, 10 minutes is a really long time. Yeah.
Did you feel pretty exhausted mentally and creatively at the end of the day when you're working there?
Or
did
I felt a combination of exhaustion and exhilaration.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you work really hard, as long as it's not backbreaking, you know, coal mining. If it's in your chosen field,
yeah.
You feel fulfilled. You feel kind of, wow, that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And where's the bed? You know, in short order.
So you didn't really work on much, like you had that as like a job for 3 years, but like, where did you find the energy to work on stuff like after the working day?
No. That was it. Oh. That was it. And then, you know, maybe go out and see some music in the mm-hmm. evening or something like that, but definitely not do more work.
Yeah.
As a writer in the 70s, like what were the options available? I mean, I feel like, you know, there are so many options available to writers now. There's so many different platforms people can work on, different types of shows or whatever. So what, you know, if you say it's the 70s, you go, okay, I'm going to be a writer. What options are available?
Well, I basically said I'm going to be a writer and performer. But because I didn't do stand-up, people didn't take me seriously, including my managers at the time. Well, if you're going to perform, well, how come you're not at the club? Because I don't want to perform the drunks, asshole. What about that, don't you understand? No, I like performing characters, and I like performing full-fledged characters. I don't like that thing of, here's how he might look.
Right.
Oh, hey, look at
you. You were transformed. Yeah. Exactly. Carrie, where'd you go for a second?
Yeah, I know. That's scary, isn't it? I just never liked that. I like really being as complete into the character as possible. So stand-up club dates don't give you that opportunity very often. Anyway, writing a movie with Albert. Then I worked on he did short films the first year. He was the first year of Saturday Night Live, mm-hmm, yeah. So I worked with him on that. I worked with Martin Mull.
Fernwood, right?
Fernwood Tonight.
Yeah.
So more writing jobs. And then in sort of the turn of the decade, Rob Reiner, whom I'd known, and Christopher Guest and Tom Leopold, a very funny guy, and Billy Crystal and Michael McKean and I coalesced to do a pilot called The TV Show, which is, among other things, where Spinal Tap was born.
Oh, wow.
And I really got a chance to perform a lot in that show, and that was like the next thing I knew I was doing Saturday Night Live and getting almost no chance to perform. So you know,
how did Spinal Tap go from, was it a sketch on the show that
yes,
you guys were doing?
The show was called The TV Show. It's still floating in the internet somewhere.
Yeah.
And the idea was another ahead of its time idea. I think a guy you starts out, you're behind a guy sitting in a chair with a remote control watching a big screen TV, and basically, the show is you're watching what he's watching. And it's parodies of what is on TV during a day. And because we've got the remote control, the old problem of, man, it's a great sketch, but that
how do you got to get the ending?
Boom, you're gone.
Well, that's why Python bled so many sketches in one another, because sketch endings are fucking hard to write.
That's right. They're the worst.
Yeah.
So we got another way around it.
That's genius.
The end of the day was a takeoff on a show that was on NBC in those days called Midnight Special, hosted by Wolfman Jack. And we needed a band to perform, and so we made up this band. And made up a song, and that was the, you know, you got to see Spinal Tap for the first time, kinda.
And then whose idea? Like, did Rob say, hey, this should be a movie now?
We all were the climax of the That's good sparkle.
You can feel the sparkles sparkle down your throat.
Now, do you know that in this country, sparkling water is so much more sparkling than it is in overseas?
It's because we fucking know how to do it here in America.
That's
Harry.
Right. We're number one in sparkles.
Number one in sparkles in water.
We have too much CO2.
Fuck
That's
right. you, Italy.
That's right. Exactly.
How come there's no gold medal for that Olympics?
That's right. Yeah.
Olympic fail. Hashtag.
The last scene of that piece that we did, we're the band is on the floor with a camera over our head doing like a Busby Berkeley dance move. And it's supposed to be, you know, smoke.
Yeah.
Because it was called Rock and Roll Nightmare. And the prop guy fucks up, and instead of smoke, he's dropping hot oil on it. So rather than kill a prop man, which I believe is illegal in some states,
yes.
We started, you know, playing around with the voices, the characters themselves, because yep. in the piece they were only doing a song. And afterwards we said, you know, that was fun. Maybe we should do something more with them. And so I think through Rob, we got a deal to write a first draft screenplay for a company called Marble Arch Productions.
Okay.
Which was run by
must date back to the Roman Empire.
It does indeed.
Yeah.
It
was, their offices are in Glendale.
It was formed by this guy who had been a British media magnate of his time,
okay.
called Sir Lou Grade, although everybody called him Sir Low Grade, of course.
Sure, of course.
And after about 3 days of trying to write the script, we looked at it and said, nobody will understand this. Nobody can read this. And, you know, a first draft script is basically, here's what we propose to do. It's a sales document. Nobody will get it. So let's just take the money, the minuscule amount that we're being paid to do this, and go shoot 20 minutes of it instead. And that's what we did.
Oh, wow.
And that's really what got it started.
Which 20 minutes did you shoot?
We just... You
know, oh, it was just a random...
Yeah, I mean, there was stuff that never was in the film, like a scene in a recording studio. We did do Stonehenge. We did a version of Stonehenge. And I don't remember what else we did, but I mean, it was just odds and sods, as they say, of what might be in the movie.
A movie like that is so interesting within the comedy landscape because, I mean, obviously...
It dominates. It stands astride the comedy landscape, sir.
It really does.
A monolith above all.
A Stonehenge of its own. A meta Stonehenge. But what's so great, what's so interesting about it is that, you know, it really was ahead of its time again in terms of being viral. In that way that, you know, like it was
so ahead of its time. It was bacterial.
It was bacterial. Yes.
It was bacterial.
It infected you in a way that you didn't even know was happening.
Yeah.
But when I was in high school, it was just like passing the VHS tape around. You got to fucking see this movie. Like, and there was never really a period where that movie was dormant. It was always being passed around or you got to see this.
The only time it was dormant was when it came out in theaters for the first time.
Did it not do well?
No, it did okay, but we learned a lesson about the movie business, which was we were put out by this struggling distributor called Embassy.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a joke about what the only other two pictures they released that year were, and I've, of course, everybody's forgotten Embassy, and I've forgotten the joke.
To the internet.
They were...
The Embassy produced that joke that you can't...
Yeah, that's right. Needless to say, they went bankrupt within the year of releasing the film. What that means is we were doing fine business back in those days. Westwood was a big movie part of L.A. And we were sitting in a theater in Westwood doing good business. But Embassy had nothing else coming for the rest of the year. Paramount comes in. This is the story we were told. And says to the theater, if you want our Christmas movie, give us the theater for our movie now. And they go, goodbye, Spinal Tap.
Oh, fuck.
So that was the form of dormancy I was referring to. It was enforced dormancy.
But I think what's sort of fun about that, too, is that it feels, you know, at least when I first saw the movie, I sort of felt like I stumbled.
You were in on something.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like, oh, my God, this gem.
It was nothing that was shoved at you by the machine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that just all built this sort of lore around the movie and the story of it, which kind of made it work even better in the long term. I think you kind of lucked out in that way.
We kind of won.
Yeah.
I mean, the real win was all the guys that we went to with the 20 minutes that I mentioned that ran studios at the time, when the lights came up in their screening room, you've never seen blanker stares in your life. What was that? They'd say, and I said, "Well, that would be a feature film." What do you mean?
Well, you know, we do that for an hour and a half.
What do you mean? Rock and roll movies don't make money. I mean, that conversation. Within 10 years, all those guys, same people, same individuals, are like running after us, you know, saying, "Will you do a sequel? Here's some money."
Well, sure. Because that section of the business, they're not trend makers. They're trend chasers.
That's right.
And so
we got to say no to them.
Yeah. Well, that's fucking great.
Yeah. That's the turn. Sometimes it turns bad.
Even if it takes 10 years, it's still a satisfying moment.
So worth it.
When you know that you were right.
Sweeter. The 10 years. <is sweeter. laughs> So I knew you'd come crawling back. No.
Yeah, how do you like the view of my shoes now? They're in your face. I kick you away. But how much of that movie, if you took all of the footage that you guys shot, how long of a movie could you actually have made?
If you wanted to repeat every take, you know, I mean, all the takes?
Not all the takes. I mean,
strung together the best takes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. Probably 2.5 hours, maybe three.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
There was so much stuff. I mean, there was a whole subplot about where the
Cold Sores came
from. Yeah. That was a band.
Which
was a band that was opening for us called The Dose. And we all fucked the lead singer. But only found it out.
As the Cold Sores.
As the telltale appendage appeared, you see. So, and then we realized this movie was way too long. We could just cut all that out and just let the sores speak for the.
Yeah, but that's what's so great. It's not harped on at all. It just kind of shows that you all have it, and it's just done. Yeah.
So you know, the point sometimes is you have to kill the things you love, and you're the better for it. You know, we could have put that story in and it would have been way too long and harped on it, and we got all the value of the joke with none of the muss and fuss.
And also the idea that not all comedy has to be explained.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Really? What do you mean?
Oh, well,
No, it's true. Comedy doesn't need to be explained. It shouldn't have to be explained.
Yeah. You know? Every time you work with Christopher Guest and that crew of folks, does it just feel super familiar, or do you feel like, oh, each time it feels like a new thing that we're trying to figure out and do?
It's both. It's we get to play again, goody.
Yeah.
And oh fuck, now what do we do?
Right.
It's both. I mean, the last one we did, For Your Consideration, I was in it more than I'd been in the others. So I was together with everybody at the start of the process, and I'd never seen Catherine O'Hara and John Michael Higgins and Freddie and Willard and he's over at the Tiki right now. What do they expect you to be doing in a porn theater, by the way?
You know,
reading the Atlas.
Also, I love that he said the movie was lousy.
Yeah. You think that's embarrassing?
But, I'm sorry. Is the crime problem so solved in LA that we can afford a cop lurking in a porn theater waiting for somebody to jerk off?
I just like to think that like they were both doing it, but like a cop was there, Fred was there, but they matched eyes, and the cop's like, "Well, it's not going to be me that's going to get caught."
Okay, we're going to race. If I finish first, you get arrested. Damn it!
Come with me.
But seeing all of them, you know, as we're starting to put our looks together, because we get to choose how we want to look and stuff like that, and everybody's talking about how nervous and how, you know, absolutely fraught they are with apprehension about, oh, fuck, what am I going to do? Why did I say yes to this again?
Poor
So, you know, I thought that was just something that I experienced, and I'm hearing Catherine, who to me is one of the queens of comedy of all time, saying that that's what she was going through, and so I lorded it over her.
You're mortal, just like the rest of us.
You weakling. No, it was just, we all feel both things, you know. It's and to feel that excitement and to feel that nervousness to me is what you're supposed to feel in starting a new, you know, or going on stage or anything. I mean, people who say they don't feel nervous, I think they must be dead when they go on stage.
Yeah.
You're supposed to feel nervous. That's how you get the adrenaline to have the balls to go out there.
I think one of the things that I learned the most as a performer from watching, you know, particularly Spinal
Tap. Oh, you're in the business.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I actually do. It probably doesn't feel like it because we're in the E building.
You're in a business.
But one of the...
I can't wait till they finish the name of the building.
It's not. It's just... But it's the idea of that, you know, you can get so much comedy from just being really sincere. As long as you're really sincere about something, that so much can happen.
Well, I mean, that's really the key to what we're making fun of in the Christopher Guest movies is earnestness.
Yeah.
You know, all these people are so earnest about what they're doing, and, you know, they don't take a moment's break to realize they're being kind of silly sometimes.
Yeah.
Know? Which a lot of people don't do.
Yeah.
You know? Which is why we make fun of them.
Is it weird for you guys to then, you know, because now... You guys actually have toured as a band.
We have. Well, we've toured as two bands. We've toured.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Of course. Has the Folksman opened up for Spinal?
Yes.
Yeah.
At Carnegie fucking Hall, as Derek Smalls called it. First words on stage in the broom. Well, they pissed me off. They were, you know, all that union stuff, and we had a tour sponsor, which was a fake brand of adult diapers, and we had a banner that said, "Wet is good, dry is better." And the other side it said rock with confidence.
Yeah.
And they said, you can't put that up. What do you mean? That's part of our show. No, you don't understand. This is Carnegie Hall. You don't have there's no commercial sponsorship. No, you don't understand.
This is not a real thing.
Not a real thing. This is a joke. No, you don't understand. So by the time we got to the stage, all I could say as Derek was, "Wow, Carnegie fucking Hall." But yes, we opened. Folksman opened for Tap at Carnegie Hall at the Greek Theater at the Hard Rock in Vegas, and then we went back to New York and opened at the Beacon, and they didn't remember to tell people coming to the Beacon that there was going to be an opening act. So we had this wonderfully mortifying moment where we're standing on stage and our fans are heckling us, yelling, "Tap! Oh, yeah!" No, we're making fun of that, and then we're having to go through it ourselves.
Fucking brilliant.
What was it like? The Spinal Tap songs actually like hold up really well. Like all the different types of incarnations of the, you know, tap music, from Cups and Cakes to Flower People and to the heavy metal stuff. Like, what were some of the bands that you based? Like, did you guys like the heavy metal that tap was kind of playing, or was it there certain bands you heard where you're like, "This is kind of fine to make"?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I mean, we had come up with sort of that earlier version of rock and roll.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when Michael wrote Cups and Cakes, it was really like that thing that every band was trying to do, like, okay, that's what the Beatles are doing, we'll do that for a minute. Or that's what the Yardbirds are doing, we'll do that. I mean, that's what bands did. They just, anything that was going, they'd try to do that style, and a band with less talent like Tap just was more slavishly
every
imitative
time.
And so that's what got them into, you know, metal or hard rock, was just it required slightly less melodic imagination and a lot less lyrical imagination than, you know, those other things. So it really was like a comfort zone for them. I wouldn't say that was my favorite kind of music. I mean, we went to some concerts in the genre while we were making the movie.
Went
to see Judas Priest at Long Beach Arena, which is maybe the loudest thing I'd ever heard at the time.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was you guys, I think it was around the time of Break Like the Wind, where you did that the Freddie Mercury benefit.
It was later.
Oh, it was later than Break Like the Wind?
That was early 2000s. Yeah, we did.
Was that?
Yeah.
I think it was Wembley Stadium, and you guys had an interaction with Metallica, because your guys' dressing rooms were right next to each other.
That
must have been in 92, 91.
No. That was Live Earth. We followed Metallica.
Yeah.
Now, try that.
No.
Try that.
No, well, we just did the Outside Lands in San Francisco, and Metallica... We were in the comedy tent, but then our show kind of ran over, and Metallica started, and it was just like all of Golden Gate Park just.
It was really
well,
loud.
I mean, we're standing on the stage watching them, you know, before we go on, and I swear, I mean, if It wasn't hard to get out of the venue. And if we hadn't made a commitment, you know, I would have said, come on.
So what are we doing?
What are we doing? I mean, it ended up being fine. But, I mean, there's such a prodigiously powerful, amazing, kick-ass, say, you know, you, any adjective you want, ridiculously talented band. The idea of coming on after them just seemed like a suicide mission.
But then you played Big Bottom with, like, how many bass players?
Oh, we had 19 bass players.
19 bass players.
Including Trujillo from Metallica,
yes, from Metallica,
who kicked ass in that.
Doesn't use a pick. Only uses his fingers.
I never use a pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty. It's more common than you think.
It's just, you
but
know.
With hard rock, if you're playing faster, it gets tough.
What, with a finger?
Yeah. Need the callus.
I'm an upright player. I welcome calluses.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you do. You play. You do play upright bass.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because yeah,
how do you find the with a fretless instrument? How do you find the? How do you know to?
Same
I don't
way you
know
do with
the
trombone. You stop.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah.
I know.
With a trombone, though, you just stop playing.
That's like, you're smart. It's just muscle
you
memory.
You played trombone?
I did. Yeah. When I was
really?
A kid.
You know how you can tell the difference between a trombone player and a dead snake in the middle of the road?
No.
Snake was on his way to a gig.
he sounds like my dad when I quit saxophone to play trombone.
How many instruments
you quit
did you
sax
play?
To go to trombone?
Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted to get the chicks.
Yep, that's right.
I actually did, and then she stopped playing.
Just wanted to work out your right arm, that's it.
Well, why, you got to do that.
Did too many sax players and not enough trombone players?
No, it was just there was only one other trombone player, and she was a girl I had a crush on. And I was like, oh, obviously we'd have to have lessons together. I took trombone, so I quit alto sax, and then I started playing trombone, and then we had one lesson together, and then she quit.
Yeah. You ruined her passion for trombone.
Yeah, exactly.
What if you ruined it? What if she had such a passion for trombone, and you came in, and she's like, oh, this makes me uncomfortable. And she could have been the biggest trombone player in the world.
You know what's hard is that so many...
Cindy Dolfer. Oh, no, she's a sax player.
Yeah.
So I'm fighting the urge because so many things that I want to reference are jokes from The Simpsons. Just that joke where the team goes to, they were going to sell the team to Albuquerque and they open that room and it's the guy going, wah, wah, and actually show the player. But I can't do that because it's your show.
Well, it's not my show.
Well, but it is.
You
do. But you do.
For my show, there'd be a full name on the name of this building and not just one letter.
Not just one letter.
That's the power I would have. I'd give this building a complete name.
E. Montgomery Burns. The Simpsons is one of those stories that is so interesting that it's almost like, oh, Fonzie was supposed to be in one episode of Happy Days, but then he ended up becoming the show, basically.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think most people of my generation know, like, well, this was a series of shorts on Tracy Ullman, and but. There's
but
just
you have to say Tracy Ullman show.
The Tracy Ullman show.
Like Tracy Ullman wore Simpsons shorts. And,
yes. Yeah. No. Yeah.
That's not what happened to it.
She wore these shorts.
She made that one time. Not one time.
Matt Groening drew on her shorts. And that's
would you please just wear these characters on your shorts? Because people like watching you. And they like watching. Just the idea that something that has become really a staple of American television was just sort of this is sort of a thing we're going to do. I mean, so what for you, what was the sort of emotional ride of, guys, I think this is actually going to become a show. Oh, wait, this show is not going anywhere anytime soon.
You know, I'd watched that same thing happen. Apropos, you mentioned Happy Days. My partners in this group that I came up with became Lenny and Squiggy.
Sure, of course, yeah.
In Laverne and Shirley. Now, Laverne and Shirley, it's not widely remembered. Is the only show in the history of American television to debut at number one.
Oh.
Wow.
It premiered at number one. Now, I saw what happened when people who thought, well, we're just having like a little 6-week gig and then we'll go, the concrete doors slam down 7 years, babe.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Simpsons was not like that at all, partly because... although we thought it was like a short-term gig for a short-term network. I mean, at the beginning,
of course.
Fox, you needed a coat hanger on your TV to get the UHF channel.
Not really a lot of original programming on Fox at the time. They had Tracy
the
Ullman.
The New Adventures of Beans Baxter.
Yes, yes, of course. Oh, there was also a real estate show called... it was like a sitcom that took place in a real estate office.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I can't remember, but it was like... But essentially, Married with Children was kind of keeping the network afloat.
George C. Scott was Mr. President. it was a real great lineup that we walked into. But what, you know, I think the three things that made the network stick around were Married with Children, The Simpsons, and then when they got NFL football. That was the third nail.
I thought you were going to say Herman's head.
Yeah. I was going to say Herman's head. Because very last instant, I swerved to avoid it.
That's the fourth thing.
That's not the second time I've thought of the Herman's head in the last day.
Really?
Well, Groundhog Day was on last night, and the guy who was in Herman's head, who sort of played the big slovenly part of his brain,
that's right,
is the one who's like, you off to see the groundhog today?
That's right.
So I always think of Herman's head whenever I watch Groundhog
Day.
Always
think of Herman's
head. Always think of it every day.
Wow. Yardley Smith in Herman's head.
Yardley
Smith.
Smythe. Sorry. but so when, you know, the idea that this was a big thing was sort of great, surprising, but not at all the dread that the people at Laverne and Shirley had when, holy mackerel.
Do you think they felt trapped by the success of the show?
I think they felt like they didn't really, you didn't really mean it that we were here for 7 years, did you?
Right.
You were kidding about that. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I knew a little bit. I was around the show for that first 13 weeks. Literally within 3 weeks, because Laverne and Shirley had spun off from Happy Days.
Of course.
So now ABC thinks, we have the magic formula. We spun one thing off. It's number one.
Mark and Mindy spun off of Happy Days,
yes,
too.
So let's keep this going. So they tried a Lenny and Squiggy spinoff. Which fortunately no one will ever see.
That's interesting because they really were the applause breaks whenever the hello, like when they would burst through the door. Mm-hmm. It is kind of surprising to me that, do you think it's because those characters needed to be just sort of like side contextual characters rather than their own story, or was it just not?
You mean why the show didn't happen? I don't know. I mean, Michael and David and I wrote the script for the whatever that thing was.
Yeah,
it was them going into the army.
Gotcha.
So we figured now we can mine all the old Bilko gags.
Right.
Except it's two guys.
Their NAM draft came up. And like,
yeah. I mean.
Oh no.
But it never aired. I mean, it was not like it it aired and it just it never aired. It somehow was fortunately or unfortunately, whatever one thinks.
Do you have a copy of this somewhere?
I do not.
That would be a fun Cinefamily screening one night.
Well, a friend of mine who worked at Paramount for a number of years, where all this happened, he was a producer there, and he heard about this, and he wanted to torment me, so he said, "I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it. I swear to God, I'm going to find that show," and he never did.
Oh,
did you work on their record too? Because they put out a record.
No. What was that called? Oh,
I think it was just covers.
Now
right?
We're doing this.
Yeah, Squiggy and the. Yeah.
That happened.
Lenny and the Squeaketones.
Yes.
That had a lot of people.
Good pull.
Good pull. Good pull.
I'm sorry. What is Lenny and the Squeaketones?
400.
That is the Daily Double.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I got that backwards.
Squiggle.
We should have told you it was a Daily Double before. What a waste.
How's he doing? Do we know?
Trebek? I don't know how he's doing.
They're in reruns.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't.
I think he's doing fine because I was on TMZ the other day and I saw his face.
On TMZ?
Like he was out at a restaurant.
Oh.
So.
Really?
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah. Boy, talk about being trapped in a show for like 7 years. You imagine, imagine being in a show every time. I mean,
time he shaves his mustache or grows it back, it's somehow news.
It is a little bit of news.
Yeah. Well, what else is he going to do? I shaved my pube. Oh, sorry. We're 400.
But you know, I look at that show and I look at Wheel of Fortune and I wonder if that's one of those sort of like Faustian claws. You're like, I just want a successful show. All right.
Yes.
You'll we'll have that you show for 40 years. And then it's just every fucking day.
Yeah. Well, they do like 8 a day. So he gets a lot of time off.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. But I always find it weird that those shows are yoked together. You know, it's like your sentence is to go through eternity yoked to this really dumb show that follows you. that people have, you know, feel like I'm kind of smarter watching Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. All those brain cells are dying the minute Vanna hits the screen.
It is pretty amazing the stark contrast between I have to have knowledge of trivia and for like really a lot of times very obscure information.
Yeah,
and
sometimes very scholarly information.
And then the next show is
give me an E.
The next show is word speller. What are words like?
Yeah, exactly. It's bizarre. So
can I purchase a vowel in this weird letter economy?
Spin the wheel.
I don't know anything about Pat Sajak. He might be the happiest person in the world, but I feel like lately when I see episodes of Wheel of Fortune, there's just this behind the eyes, there's a little bit of like, please kill me.
Not as much as I see in Alex Trebek.
Really?
I don't know. I see a bit of just like, you know, he's waiting for the camera to be off of him so he can take another swig. Yeah.
Well, I can only say, having been in a Celebrity Jeopardy tournament, that he seems, when you're there at the show, he seems to be digging it.
Oh, that's good.
I did a Celebrity Jeopardy in 97.
Who was the celebrity?
that's a fair joke.
You.
No, that's a fair joke.
Welcome to the podcast.
And he fucked me hard.
Whoa!
I just need to get that out. Guys, I feel so much better.
What is rape?
Were you legitimate?
It was
legitimate rape is on Broadway, right?
It is, yeah, I think so. The rapists.
Crepe is crepe.
But he didn't give me the right answer. I said, the answer was, I said, Annie Leibovitz. Who is Annie Leibovitz, a photographer? Uh-huh. And he said, no. And then no one else got it. Correct pronunciation, Annie Leibovitz.
Oh, no.
I'm like, you just fucked my charity, man.
He didn't do that.
He did.
The correct pronunciation is Leibovitz.
And I didn't get the money for it. I think my response was, damn Germans! I think I actually like exclaimed.
Wow!
Jeez.
So there was a one a couple nights ago where the final Jeopardy question was based on a pun in a newspaper headline.
What?
Think, no, that's not right.
Oh, come on!
Wow! No!
What? How'd you do?
I won the first time, and then I went into the tournament of the people who'd won, and I sucked eggs.
Who were you up against?
I was up. It wasn't that. I just fucked up. I was bad on the, you know, it's
the
all
buzzer.
The timing.
The timing is crazy. So next to Alex, there are lights that are on. And as soon
this
as
is
the,
in case you go on Jeopardy,
just
kids.
This is in case you ever go on Jeopardy. And as soon as the lights go off, the buttons are unlocked. And that's to prevent people from buzzing in before he finishes the question. So you're locked out. But as soon as those lights go off, you can hit the button. But if you misfire, your button doesn't work for like another second and a half.
Oh,
it's all about timing. It's all about timing. It has nothing to do, I mean, a lot of people think it's about what you know, but most people who get, especially in repeats, like the celebrity tournament repeaters, everybody has won a game, has won a series. But it's all about whether you're hitting it too early. You know, if you watch it at home, I keep trying to tell my wife, don't answer the question until he's finished asking it, because otherwise you're not playing Jeopardy.
That's true.
But that's a human impulse, is to, as soon as you know it, to just go, Philippines!
What are the finger lakes?
The finger lakes.
But also, you know, I mean, let's be honest, Celebrity Jeopardy was not at the caliber of regular Jeopardy, at least when I played it.
Probably less than college Jeopardy.
I think it was toddler Jeopardy.
A-E-I-O blank.
Yeah. What is you?
I'm sorry.
What is you?
I'm sorry, that should be what are you?
Damn it, you're not going to give it to me because I didn't use the right linking verb?
That's right.
Son of a... The Jeopardy was really fun. Who was on the first episode?
I beat Isaac Mizrahi and Soledad O'Brien, and Final Jeopardy was, this is the smallest in terms of territory, permanent member of the UN Security Council.
Oh.
And Isaac Mizrahi said, my house?
Jesus
Christ. And Soledad O'Brien, Harvard grad, said France.
Oh.
And I said United Kingdom.
And you won.
I won!
Mine was Patrick Duffy and Sharon Lawrence.
Whoa.
Wow.
And the final Jeopardy question was something about which U.S. president's half-brother served in the British Navy under Admiral Edward Vernon, I think.
And?
It was Washington.
That's not that dumbed down.
It was, well, I guess, but I heard Vernon and instantly thought Mount Vernon. And so that was
so
my...
So you just drew a picture of a mountain?
Mm-hmm. No. What is... What is...
What is me?
What is mountain? Alex, what is love? What is... He didn't like me either, Alex, because I was...
Projecting.
I know, I could... Well, I mean, he's a very... There's a confident arrogance about him.
He's dapper.
He's Dapper Dan. And at the time, I was working on MTV, and I was just this kind of young, obnoxious kid cracking jokes, and I just don't think it really fit his... It was not typical for the...
You were not in his wheelhouse.
I was not in his wheelhouse. Like people usually didn't snark back at Alex Trebek the show. I think... The first time he kind of, because he does that thing where someone doesn't get something, he goes, ooh, a good guess, the actual answer. And I think I said something like, nah, I know that all the answers on my show too, or something. But I was hosting a dumb dating show. And it just didn't hit him in the right way.
Yeah.
But the
smart ass kid he never had.
That's right.
Time to take it out on this.
But
kid.
I've since moved in with him, and we've worked out our differences.
Excellent. Yeah, well, see, that's a lovely story.
you celebrate Boxing Day?
Yeah.
Does Canada do that?
I think Canada does do some of that.
You Canadian?
No, but he is.
Oh, Calix. Yeah. Canadians celebrate Boxing Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And they celebrate Thanksgiving on October 1st.
Weird.
That is so nutty. Who feels grateful then?
I don't.
Carson City, Nevada.
I'm still bitter.
Carson City, Nevada celebrates Halloween on November 1st.
Why? They,
because October 31st is like
Carson Rush Day.
Like Kit Carson Day.
Oh, wow.
Or Nevada Day or something like that. It's like when Kit Carson came in and founded the state.
Oh, well, sure.
Yeah. Anybody know when Canada Day is?
Is it the day
July
after 7th of no, January?
July 1st.
I know because... one year, Spinal Tap did a Canada Day tour of Canada.
Oh.
Three gigs, three cities,
one day. Oh, what? My God.
Yeah. They flew us from St. John's, Newfoundland, 11 a.m. gig, to Toronto, three in the afternoon gig,
Jesus.
To Vancouver, midnight gig.
How did all the equipment work out? Did you guys just bring your guitars?
We just brought guitars. And
so you probably felt great by the end of the day.
Felt fucking great. Well, we got a lot of sleep on the plane, so not bad.
Wow.
That's cool. Are we playing full sets in every town?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
How long is your set? An hour and a half?
Well, no, we didn't play that. I mean, we played about 45 minutes.
Still a lot.
Because we were playing festivals, but yeah.
Right. Jesus Christ.
That's so cool.
Canada Day.
Were there any gags in the movie that were sort of throwaways that you were like, nah, I don't know if anyone's going to get this, that ended up becoming like sort of comedy canon?
I mean, everything. You know, nobody expected 11 to be part of get into the Oxford English Dictionary.
Right.
It's just that there were little jokes to us that, you know, were cool. We weren't planning on T-shirts, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'd own this building and it didn't have to.
Me and my friends were actually, when we were kids, we started a band called The New Originals. Yeah.
In honor or?
Yeah, in honor. No, just like because of the movie.
Oh, good.
And we put out like a tape and on it, like it said, like it had the New Originals and then we crossed out New and then rewrote New.
That's adorable. Yeah.
That's cute. You must have been a cute kid.
Yeah, I was.
I'm sorry that I don't know the answer to this, and I apologize. Are you still doing the show?
Yes.
How?
You're better than the people who come up to me and say, "I love your show. Are you still doing it?" Which happens more than you think. Yes.
For me, I've just I have not. I just haven't been listening to terrestrial radio.
Radio.
We just call it the terrestrials. Call it.
Yes.
So I
listen to extraterrestrial radio.
I listen to extraterrestrial. In a way, I do listen to extraterrestrial radio. Now I'm just on the fucking phone all the time when I'm in the car. I don't even listen to music.
Well, we love people like you.
No, I'm not holding up the phone.
Okay,
no, I'm.
Right.
It goes through.
No, he's holding it in front of his face because that's illegal.
How am I supposed to?
He's got it sitting in his.
Yeah, I need to be texting. So I'm on my iPad watching Netflix. Yeah.
This is safer. This is safer. Talk on your phone like this.
Yeah. Just hold it right in the front.
Yes, still doing it.
How did so? When did you pitch this to National Public Radio or to PRI?
NPR has nothing to do with it. No, it's purely. Between me and KCRW, the originating station, and the stations that pick it up, any public radio station can put a show up on the satellite. It doesn't go through Washington. It doesn't go through that bureaucracy there. It doesn't, therefore, need funding.
Right.
Funding doesn't need the little guy with the weedy voice saying, support for this program.
Provided
Medtronic. Putting new metal stuff in your body.
By the Arthur T.
By the Jonah T. Salk Foundation.
Funded by a grant from the Chubb Group.
Making programs that Mrs. Salk thinks she remembers hearing.
I'm glad. I mean, I so miss good. Just, I guess I'm just always disappointed. I mean, you know, KCRW aside, I'm always just disappointed in LA radio. Like, I have a bad attitude about, like, God damn it, this is a big city. You should be better than you are, LA radio.
LA was a great radio town for a long time. I mean, there's a guy who still works here who is amazing, Phil Hendry.
Phil's, yeah. Of course.
Is he back on the radio?
Yeah, he's back on KTLK, Progressive Talk, so-called.
Because he tried to go on the web for a bit, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's had, you know, ups and downs, but I mean, that period when he was on KFI and you could, I was doing a lot of work in television, episodic television in those days, and you'd get on a set and all the crew could talk about it at the craft service table was what Phil had on that the night before.
Wow. Yeah.
They were all talking about those bits. They were all talking about those characters. It was amazing. It was just like, you know, I thought that was, and the work was just at such a high level and still is. I mean, he's back at pretty near the top of his form. I think he's amazing. And so, you know, LA Radio has produced that, but not much else these days.
I always kept thinking, like, surely there's no one left who doesn't know
that it's fake.
Yeah,
I know.
There's, of course. But
Barnum told you the answer to that.
Of yeah.
Yeah.
Every minute.
Every minute.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's sped up now.
Look around this building.
This might be the epicenter.
Yeah.
This might be the hive.
That's what E stands for.
It's epicenter. The epicenter building. Yeah. Yes.
Or it's the Epilady building.
That'll be their new campaign.
But, you know, radio, for those people like me who love it, it's like watching this kind of car that you've adored through the years, that if you were a car fan,
sure,
and you lent it to people and they've just always smashed it up, but you get it back and you try to patch it up, and you know, but you make the mistake of lending it, and we keep lending radio to these assholes in like the building right next door,
yeah,
who you know, destroy it.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do the podcast thing, was that I worked in LA radio for 3 or 4 years in LA, and I always missed it, but I always felt like, it should just be better. Like,
Jonesy's Jukebox was a great show.
Yeah. Yeah, which he's doing again on K-Rock.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah. It's a Sunday night. He bumped Rodney even later now.
Really?
Yeah.
We just had him on last week, and he started doing it weekly.
Oh, he's great. I love that show.
Yeah, that's a great show. I miss it being every week. It was just the nicest thing to listen to during the afternoon.
Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a question that I have that I'm going to say now instead of explaining what questions are.
And then I'm going to try to answer it if I can pay attention.
And I'll nod. When the Simpsons cast did the Inside the Actor's Studio, mm-hmm, halfway through the episode,
Julie Kavner disappeared.
Just disappeared, and there's never a reference to it.
She had to catch a train.
Oh, okay.
The taping lasted 6 hours.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that why everyone seemed pretty
low energy?
Yeah.
And the first bathroom break didn't happen until 4.5 hours.
6 hours?
Oh. Yeah, because I was watching it, you just see people kind of just like, and there was so many people to cover.
Yeah, well, I mean, the guy had like this pile of 3x5 cards, and he was determined not to stop the show until he'd gone through every single one of them.
Come on, James Lipton.
Yeah. Oh, he's it was arduous. It was a trek.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a death march.
Because for me, rewatching it, I was always like, some shit must have gone down because she just disappeared. No one ever referenced her again.
Yeah, she just said, I have a train to catch.
And then, pew!
Yeah.
I to Long Island.
I still remember watching her cute face on Rhoda. Just the adorable younger sister with that voice.
Yeah.
The inescapable. Yardley Smith actually was at a restaurant that I've never actually seen her in the wild before. And then a week and a half ago, I was at a restaurant and I hear the voice and it just like, it just heads turn. Like it's just,
yeah,
it must be kind of a blessing and a curse at the same time.
Well, you got to be careful. I mean, the first time it happened to me, I was in a Whole Foods and they said paper and plastic. And I said, paper and people.
Principal Skinner.
No. Because I think my natural speaking voice, if this is could be called a natural speaking voice,
yes.
is closest to Skinner. So
yeah.
But you know, there are worse things in the world.
There are worse.
We do come get into the business to be recognized after
we
all.
We do, but I think there's
I want my privacy, man. And I'm gonna go on Larry King tonight to talk more about how much I want my privacy.
Seriously, Larry, why can't people just leave me alone?
Leave me alone. Just keep that on me. Leave me alone.
All right, we'll take calls for you about leaving you alone.
Okay, but just remember to leave me alone.
Okay.
Pete and Poughkeepsie.
Jesus Christ, Pete, leave me alone. But I also think there's a certain amount of it, like you have this idea in your head, like, oh, you know, I want the success in this certain, you know, arena. It's hopefully will fill whatever hole is in me and then everything will be great. Mm-hmm. But then there's the extreme side of it, which you guys are, which I imagine a lot of times people go, oh, I can just make them puppets and I want you to perform for me.
People, in my experience, are very good about it.
Oh, good.
Deferential and very kind of tentative and not demanding and not
okay, good.
Entitled. And also because I do a lot of different things, it's not always about that.
Of course.
So it retains the element of surprise, which, you know, taught me a good lesson. If you keep surprising the audience, they'll keep surprising you.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. And if you keep feeding them the same thing, they'll keep feeding you the same thing. It's a relationship.
At this point in the show where you guys are
based. Oh, I thought you meant in this show.
No.
At this point in the show, we bring in Dr. Phil.
How come you get them? I don't know what else Dr. Phil would say. I haven't really watched enough Dr. Phil because
I want you to work on your relationship 5 minutes of every day. Can you do that? Can you commit to that?
Can you do that, Dr. Phil? Hey, wait a minute. Why are you turning the lens on me?
Why are you speaking like I am?
Oh, there's a fucking Rod Serling episode where everyone just turns around and they have Dr. Phil's head.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hold up a mirror to that guy. Take some of this back.
It would just turn into a circle jerk.
Those dreams. You at this point in the show.
No, at this point in your show, you guys are so like these characters are so much in you are so much these characters. Mm-hmm.
But they can fire us tomorrow.
No, of course they. Well, they could.
Yeah, they could if they were that stupid.
Yeah, if they wanted to end the show, they could.
They
yeah.
could, but also at the same time, you know, obviously new crops of writers are coming in.
Mm-hmm. They're being bussed in from the
Harvard.
Mexican border. Right now.
From the Mexican border of Harvard. at this point, I feel like it would be intimidating to come on a show like that and write for you guys because you know the characters. I wouldn't know how to place a joke in front of you and go, here's a Mr. Burns joke.
It's really interesting. Yes, we're on about our, I don't know, eighth or ninth generation of writers. And for a lot of them, you know, they've grown up with the show to the extent that they've grown up. There are times when you sense the exact opposite of that, that the characters sometimes have become kind of playthings.
Mm-hmm.
And the only real arguments that happen at The Simpsons in my ken are, you know, somebody will write a joke where Flanders does a joke that is a deliberate joke on the name Jesus Christ, for example.
Right.
And I'll say, look, me personally, I couldn't care less, but Flanders wouldn't say this. This would be deeply offensive to him.
Yeah.
No, but just try it. Well, I'm just saying we have a history here of what this character is and who he is, and this violates that, and why do we want to do it for one joke, you
right?
know? We got 20 years equity with the audience that they believe this guy, they believe in it, that he is this person. No, just go ahead, just try it. We'll talk, but you know, we'll fix it in post. That happens.
Wow.
Well, then you also make Skinner not Skinner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tamsarian.
Yeah.
Armin Tamsarian. A show about which we're not supposed to speak anymore.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Speak of it again.
Yeah.
Or like when Moe's face changed a few times.
Yeah. So, I mean, I one would wish that there was a little more of, you know, what you're suggesting, but it doesn't appear to be what happens.
I guess, I mean, I've worked on shows for just a couple seasons where after, you know, even 50 episodes of a show, you're like, what the fuck do we do with these characters anymore?
Yeah, but the Simpsons have 50 characters.
That's true.
That's the big, big, big... Well, there are two big differences between The Simpsons and any other show that's ever been on television. The one is the vast number of characters that we have available to us to talk about and do stories with. And the other is that, thanks to Jim Brooks, in the original deal he made with Fox, there is no network creative interference in the show. The only show in the history of American network television that can say that. And you wonder, well, gee, The Simpsons has been a success. Why wouldn't they try that with some other shows? And,
you know? Oh, yeah. No, yeah. They don't.
We don't do that.
We have this conversation all the time, is that the network people tend to, you know, they tend to look at the wrong data points because it's very difficult to, on a spreadsheet, go, you know, we should probably just let funny people be funny. They go, oh, okay, America is scrambling for yellow-colored cartoon characters, not, well, it's because this guy had a vision and this group got together and they got to carry that out. Like,
remember all the shitty cartoon shows that came on the air in the 2 years after The Simpsons became a hit?
Oh, yeah.
Fish Police, for example. Fish Police. Whoa.
Capital Critters.
Capital Critters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Family Dog.
Holy shit.
Well, Family Dog was Amazing Stories, which actually predated The Simpsons.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, Family Dog was an Amazing Stories short from 87, I think.
Okay.
87, 88.
I'm seeing you killing in Celebrity Jeopardy with cartoon trivia.
If it's all cartoon trivia. Can that not be about the Magna Carta? Could that be about cartoons
You're
instead?
You're going to murder in the fill-in-the-blank BLANC. You're going to murder in that category.
I'm going to do really well. But yeah, that was okay. Family Dog.
But did it go to series after The Simpsons?
I think it went to series before The Simpsons.
Oh, okay.
Because it was a short on Amazing Stories that totally blew up, and then I think they pretty quickly tried to get it on the air, and then it didn't really.
Now, are you going to ask me about my record?
I would love to. God damn it! I'm so sorry. This last portion of the show is all about you plugging whatever you want to talk about.
Okay.
And also, I do announcements at the beginning of the episode, so we will front load the episode stuff about the record too.
Thank you.
Yes, tell me about the. Oh, we're all out of. No, I apologize. You know, you have to understand that we do the show because we love it, and we have people on that we are either friends with or are huge fans of. And so,
do you rent the space here?
No, we just use it.
Oh,
and so true. we tend to kind of fanboy people to death
a little bit.
Right. So we apologize
He's here for a reason.
You should talk about your album. We should absolutely give it fair time. So please. Please tell us about
next time you're on. Just feel free to.
Well, when you come back, right. It's going right to be great
this,
to talk.
Right after this short life break.
Side effects may include.
Play a Preparation H commercial real quick.
Oh, my ass hurts. Try this.
Ow!
No, wrong tube.
What you need is the free loop.
Both ways.
Catheters Incorporated.
You cats.
He cats every day.
Yeah. So, no, honestly, so please tell us about that.
Well, it's a musical record. It's called Tank Can't Take a Hint. When we started doing Spinal Tap, and then we did Folksman, and then I started doing comedic music records on my own, I just realized, of all the things I do, this is aside from doing your show,
of course,
it's probably
of course.
The favorite. So after I'd spent the last 2 years doing this really hard job, which was I made a documentary about why New Orleans flooded and went around the country with the documentary, I thought I need to go have some fun, and nothing is more fun than hanging with great musicians and doing funny songs that are musically kind of fun to play and sing. So this time we got a bunch of guests, Dr. John. Jane Lynch.
Oh, wow.
Fountains of Wayne.
Great.
Jamie Cullum. Steve Lukather.
Mm-hmm.
Skunk Baxter.
Toto.
Yeah.
Nice.
All sorts of folks.
I dated his wife before they were married.
Lukather's wife?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Did you leave a little Easter egg for him?
A literal Easter egg.
And
I've never asked that question of anybody in that context before.
did you leave an Easter egg?
Easter egg for him.
I hit it.
Yeah.
And then now they have a baby. What?
Probably not. And Nicholas Payton, the great jazz trumpet player, plays on the track with Dr. John. So it's musically quite an adventurous record about a bunch of different people and subjects. Madonna, the head of BP, who else do we do? Rupert Murdoch.
Of course.
Joe the Plumber. Who's running for Congress this year? Yeah. He's back.
And that's kind of funny. Hey, you guys were making fun of Rupert before it was a cool thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and it's still a cool thing to do.
But I mean, like before it was okay. Oh, like when it was still kind of like, oh, that's they work for that. But now, of course, it's, you know, everyone.
Well, because, you know,
someone has to.
You're not. No, it's like as long as you're not taking power or money away from him, he could care less.
Yeah. I think it's great. That whole episode about, like, everyone knows the Republican Party is one of these vines to funnel into from the FCC. Like, holy shit. You know, that moment was like, they just said like a really serious thing right there.
Well, that was like that Banksy intro.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah. That was insane.
Yeah. But Joe, the plumber, as you probably know.
Of course.
Name is not Joe.
No.
And he's not a plumber.
Nope.
But aside from that, everything
you can believe. Totally honest.
I like how they were trying to make it seem like he's like the all-American guy.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, most Americans are plumbers.
And most Americans are named Joe.
Yeah.
No, it really is about that whole thing that we live with in this country where, you know, what we just need is a common sense solution.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's what got us to the fucking moon. Well, how do you think we should get to the moon? Oh, I don't know. Aim up. There's a common sense solution.
Aim up really hard.
Aim up really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Really hard.
But I mean, seriously, that is the most used phrase in American politics. We're presenting we're giving the American people common sense solutions to their problem.
Right.
Solutions that any horse's ass know won't work. You know, I mean, it's just, so Joe is representative
going
of that.
Back to Thomas Paine.
Yeah.
Common sense.
Common sense, yeah, with capital C, capital S. And there's also a couple of songs about, Jamie's song is called A Few Bad Apples, and it's about the idea that is abroad in this country and in the world right now that when anything big goes wrong, blame the little guys.
Yeah.
You know, just blame the actual grunts on the floor and let the guys who run the place, you know, retire with big pensions or with big bonuses, and you know.
Is it kind of, is
nobody goes to jail?
Is comedy music your favorite form of comedy expression? Do you think?
It gets close to it, yeah, because it requires you to kind of get the point across in a very pithy way.
But you can also I always loved it because you can say really. You can make a really powerful statement in a way
in a gentle way.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like it has teeth.
Yeah,
per se.
People don't feel like they've been kicked in the stomach because they've been they're kind of tapping their toe.
Yeah, oh, this
they
is
go.
A really nice
yeah,
song.
Yeah. Oh, he just what? the one that's really most like that on the record is, and probably the farthest out I've gone in a while is a song called "Deaf Boys." There was a story about a priest in Milwaukee. And after he died, they realized that he had molested more than 200 deaf boys.
Jesus Christ.
And the same week, there was a story about a priest in Italy who molested deaf boys and a priest in England who molested deaf boys. And I thought, trending!
And that's a trending topic
on deaf boys.
Roman Catholic Twitter.
Yeah. So I wrote this tune, and then I thought, you know, well, how does... But I wrote it in the voice of the guy.
Yeah.
So I thought that's the funnier way to do it is just, you know, because it's not funny to just be pointing from the outside. It's
no.
funny to try to imagine this guy's head. So how does what's a singing priest sound like? Well, oh, like Bing Crosby and Going My Way. So that's sort of what Deaf Boys is.
So
like.
At
but it's a really, I mean, it's a hard subject and it's a really kind of nice ditty.
Is it what we should do is maybe
if, that's what the priest thought too.
If it's okay, if it's well done, that didn't go unnoticed, Jonah Ray.
All right.
What we should do is, if it's okay, is we'll tack on a song from the album.
Sure.
Oh, whoops. We'll tack on a song from the album at the end of this episode.
Okay.
Just so that, you know,
people
we'll
talk about.
So I assume it's available at all of the regular
It's available at all the digital things. It doesn't exist as a physical object, except when we do gigs, we'll sell it at the shows.
Cool.
But, it's Amazon and iPhones.
I love the iTones.
We're the iTones.
Just one letter, just one vowel the entire time.
We're in the E building. We must be the iTones.
We must be in the I building. Oh, you.
Hey.
Harry Shearer, it's been a tremendous honor to have you on the podcast and lovely to chat with you.
Same here.
And I hope you come back on sometime.
I would love to.
Do you ever let people come and watch Lush come?
Oh.
And
watch the show?
Watch and come? Yeah. Or do you do it at Santa Monica campus?
When I'm here, but I'm here so rarely these
days.
And you know how boring it is to watch radio.
I don't know. If
I mean, I'll drop you a line next time I'm here for a few weeks.
Cool.
And you know, if you want to, it's insanely boring.
No, not to
Are
me.
You kidding? Look at all the crowd. Look at
Where'd all the
Chris Warner?
Yeah,
we're never gonna get out of here.
Sometimes you got to chase all the pussy away. I hired a dog just like.
Hey, don't you just love it, all the people who've had to say the word pussy riot in the last 2 weeks?
That is the one thing about, you know, like, I've been, it was so hard for me when it all first broke. Now, it wasn't really hard, but I had this inner conflict where I'm like, I can't help but giggle, despite the fact that the seriousness of this case and the implications that it has for Russian culture right now, it's still, when you see pussy riot on the CNN crawl, you still can't help but go,
All the newscasters who've had to say, in Moscow today, members of the punk group Pussy Riot.
Hold it together. You're a professional.
Yeah. And they have to be extra serious in saying that, because otherwise they'll, as the British say, corpse.
They will. It's the name does not really match the weight of what is actually happening.
But it's great that they made everybody say it.
That they actually did.
And, you know, as a Russian speaker, which I was when I was a kid, I wonder what the actual name in Russian is, but it gets translated in English as Pussy Riot, so... I mean, sure, that's not the name, in Russian.
So is it whatever the colloquialism for vagina is in
Russian? But I mean, in English, it just sounds so great.
It is pretty, and it did. It also, the other kind of genius thing about it is that you become instantly aware of what's going on, because you're like, does that say pussy? And then you have to dig in farther.
Shortly afterwards, legitimate rape, and you just people have to say that.
And
too.
Then they have to say that. Yeah,
it's a hard job reading the news these days.
It's so
feel for those guys.
Difficult.
Huh? Guys,
I mean, they have the prompter scrolls. And they got to say pussy.
They have to breathe all that hairspray.
I feel like
a pussy riot broke out.
I'm hesitant to say this because I don't want to. I've met a lot of really great local news people just going through towns and doing stuff. But I always thought, you know, if my career ever goes south, you know, and I end up as a local like news person, like entertainment news guy, will I be happy with it? I'm gonna be like, I'll just take a regular job.
Chris has got the lineup on the weekend's Movie Outlook.
I really can't do it anymore, you guys. I mean, you just don't understand. It's like I feel like rotting from the inside out.
2 minutes to weather. Let's hear what we've got this weekend.
And the weather is stormy forever. I'm sorry, guys. There's a lot of stuff out this weekend. Back to you.
Who's in the movie, Chris? A guy I was in a fucking show with once.
You know that fucking guy worked for me.
I taught him everything he knows, and now he's shitting on me.
Literally. Those are my favorite jokes from The Big Picture. Do you remember The Big Picture? Did you work on The Big Picture?
I did not.
That guy was a star, a big star, and then he turned around and crapped in my face. Literally. It's just such a weird tag for a joke.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Harry Shearer. It's good to see you. Enjoy. Would you mind telling at the end of our show, we tell people to enjoy their burrito. Would you mind tagging our show for us?
Enjoy your burrito.
Wanna do Deaf Boys in the next room. Now they're in the closet, boom, boom. Between me and the broom, boom, boom. Half a dozen deaf boys, boom, boom. Nice little crowd, boom, boom. They can be quiet, boom, boom. And I can be loud. Boom, boom. 4 and 20 deaf boys. Boom, boom. Take me all day. Boom, boom. Barely got the time to. Boom, boom. Eat and to pray. Boom, boom. Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys, don't you dare call it slumming. Might be a chink in my priestly parts, but how can I resist?
How can deaf I resist?
Boys? Boom, 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 boom. 50 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
Who got a head of steam?
Boom, boom.
I could be their coach.
Boom, boom.
They could be my team.
Boom, boom.
88 deaf boys.
Boom, boom.
One for each key.
Boom, boom.
On the piano of my longing.
Boom, boom.
They play a hushed melody.
Boom, boom.
150 deaf boys.
Boom,
ho, this could get tight.
Boom, boom.
A few dozen in the morning.
Boom, boom.
And all the rest at night.
Boom, boom.
Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys got my heartstrings a-strumming. Make me make such a joyful noise. Just can't get enough.
Just can't get enough.
Boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Now if I had a deaf boy,
boom, boom,
for each day of the year,
boom, boom,
365,
boom,
ho, that would be dear.
Boom, boom.
How many deaf boys,
boom, boom,
have there actually been?
Boom, boom.
Why not ask how many,
boom, boom,
dance on the head of a pin?
Boom, boom.
The world is full of deaf boys,
boom, boom,
and I'm only one man.
Boom, boom.
All that God expects is,
boom, boom,
do all that you can. Deaf boys can't hear me coming. Deaf boys got me hymning and humming. A shepherd with a closet full of toys. Let's hear it for those deaf
for
boys.
Boom, 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 boom.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.